Support this podcast via our Patreon and get more writerly goodness. Visit patreon.com/nanocast to join up.
Welcome to The Everyday Novelist. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer. I'm the author of some 27 books, 34 short stories, and numerous articles and scripts and essays, and I am your guide on this journey to raise your productivity to pulp speed levels and to explore the cracks and crevices of business and craft in the writing life.
Welcome to The Questions, episode 588.
Today, Robert asks,
can you suggest ways to stress test a premise before we start to write? Even though you don't outline, are there elements you make sure you've considered?
Sometimes, especially when building a new story world or taking a new angle on something, I will spend a lot of time ruminating before and during the early phases of a book when I'm venturing out into territory I haven't previously mapped in other stories. So if it's a book that's not in a series, or it's a book that explores a portion of a previously established universe that I haven't otherwise explored, or it's a new genre for me or whatnot, mostly what I'm ruminating about are idiot plot points. An idiot plot is a storyline which only works if your characters behave in a way that is far stupider than they are ostensibly supposed to be. In other words, anything you see in most action-adventure movies and all superhero films. People ask me why I fell off the Marvel Universe train. The idiot plot is the reason. Lost, on the other hand, the TV series Lost, managed to make idiot plots work for it because everybody on that show was a fucking idiot. And that was sort of the feature rather than a bug. So, you know, you can make it work. But mostly, yeah, I like to avoid idiot plots. So what I'll do is I will think a lot about what's going on in the story. It's how to explain this process, because I've never verbalized it before, and it's non-propositional thinking. What I'm trying to do is get an idea of the mental space that the character is inhabiting and the world within which that mental space operates, so that I can explore in a sort of virtual reality fantasy walk-around type of way. I can explore the story based on what the point of view character knows, so that I don't do really stupid things for the purposes of story expediency. In other words, what I'm doing is I'm taking time to really try to inhabit the character and see the world through their eyes. And I'll do this when I'm not at the keyboard, especially in the very early stages of a book. I'll be walking around and I'll just be thinking about what I've written and visualizing what's been going on and thinking, you know, what would a person like this be really, really worried about? I'm not doing a very good job at this, am I?
Walking the question back a bit to its bare element, I think it's informative that he's asking, is there a way to stress test a premise? I'm hearing in his question, are there ideas too stupid to write about? And how do you know?
Okay, so my method for stress testing a premise is probably profoundly unhelpful, but here it is anyway. When I have an idea for a premise, you know, slug line, high concept, whatever, I write it down and I put it in my ideas file. And, you know, occasionally I'll be so on fire about it that I'll just start writing right away. And if I am that on fire about something, I just assume that it's workable, because I've grown to trust myself that much. Took a while. But otherwise, putting it in that file for when I don't have a burning project on my desk and or I want something fresh, I go back and I page through the file, and as I'm doing that, I look at things, I go, nope, that would never work, and I throw it out. I just delete it. And I look at things, and anything that survives the cut, you know, survives to live another day, and then I'll pick one out of there that seems to appeal to me or resonate with me, or sometimes it'll just, you know, I'll mash two of them together, or I'll get an idea from looking through. But there's sort of a Darwinian process at work there. One of the giveaways, I don't know if I can give you a method, I can give you some criteria. One of the giveaways is if the premise is self-contradictory, then it is either not workable or not complete. Not complete is more fun. You can make not workable premises workable if you add the right third element to the equation. Kitty, I keep stalling out on this because this is really hard to see about my own process from the inside, and you live with me and you've watched me do this. I know you've watched me work through ideas before I write them before.
You go a lot of different routes with it, but...
What are some of the things?
The major one is that sometimes you just let the ideas sit in the back of your head and not worry about it. You know, you don't try to force it to work. If it's not working, you let it sit and revisit it later when something else comes up, that third element that makes it work.
I'll leave it like as an open question in the back of my head and wait until something that fits that
right.
fits together with it comes along.
Right. And sometimes you let an idea fester for years.
There's a couple that festered for decades.
Before you actually start writing it, before you find that other element.
Two of my Lantham books, Silent Victor and He Ain't Heavy, are good examples of this. Silent Victor stuck around. I had the first chapter and a concept when I was 14, 15, and I finally wrote it when I was 35 or 36. So yeah, things can stick around for a couple of decades in the back of my head, and He Ain't Heavy was a 15-year gestation. And that's exactly what you were talking about. There were things where I had an idea, but not a way to make the idea workable. In both cases, the thing that made it workable was Lantham, and I didn't come up with Lantham for years and years later.
Taking a different tack on whether a premise is completely unworkable or not, I sort of think there's no such thing as an idea that doesn't work. There's an idea that doesn't work right now. There's an idea that doesn't work for you. There's an idea that you can't quite wrap your head around.
Oh, let's say there's ideas that just don't work. Like what are the trailers for the new Peter Jackson movie about? There's a nuclear holocaust and humanity decides to survive by putting all their cities on wheels and the cities ride around jousting each other. No.
Really?
Really?
Okay.
Now, I haven't seen the movie, so I don't know how awful it is.
Uh-huh.
But the premise is preposterous on the face of it. On the other hand, you have Howl's Moving Castle.
Uh-huh.
The premise is preposterous on the face of it. In fact, it's ball-achingly stupid. But it's told in such a way that the fact that it's ball-achingly stupid doesn't matter. Because it's not a story about that MacGuffin. That MacGuffin just adds a sense of metaphorical embodiment to the concerns of the character story. And so if you're willing to transcend up to that metaphorical level, you can get away with a lot more than if you are bound by the pedestrian constraints of reality.
Case in point. There is no premise that is stupid or too stupid to work. There's only premises that don't work this particular way. I have watched television shows that ought to make no sense, and I've loved them, and I have watched very pedestrian things where the premise is very sensible and sane, but it just doesn't do anything. And same with books, same with films. Two different people can take the same premise and do completely different things with it. I don't think there's anything that can never work. It's just might not work in these hands.
That makes me think of something. I guess this would qualify as stress testing your premise, but I would have thought of it more as iterating your premise. There's a rule in science fiction, right, that you get one gimme. You know, sometimes you can get away with a lot more than that, but the audience will usually forgive one ridiculous thing in order for the premise to work. But the best science fiction takes that ridiculous thing and starts from the ridiculousness and maps everything out with the ridiculous thing in mind. The best fantasy does too, and in order to illustrate the best fantasy, I'm going to use some of the worst. The Xanth novels by Piers Anthony, which were a guilty pleasure of mine for decades. The basic notion is that you have a world that is instilled with magic because there's a demon sleeping underneath and he's basically sweating the magic out as he sleeps. And the result of having this magic just sort of running around willy-nilly everywhere is that every human being has a magical talent and everything in the world is whimsically literally true. So a football is a ball comprised of 50 feet that all stick out from a central hub and it self-propels around the forest. A toilet tree is a tree that grows toilets. A shoe tree isn't a device that you put in your shoes to keep them fresh and in the patent leather in good shape. It is a tree that grows shoes. A breadfruit tree does not grow these weird melony papaya things that taste like crap. It grows loaves of bread. And everything is a stupid pun. But the series works, at least the first 15 books before he just got bored and stopped trying really hard. The series works because he takes that notion and he makes it the ironclad law of the jungle, so to speak. Everything is affected by it. If he didn't take it to its logical, or indeed illogical, extreme, the stories wouldn't work at all, because you would always be faced with the kinds of questions that people are now faced with in Star Wars after the last two stupid movies. Why didn't the Rebellion blow up the Death Star by flying a ship into it at light speed? Would have been a lot easier, wouldn't it? Because in The Last Jedi, that's how they won. They flew ships into other ships at light speed. Well, obviously that works from a physics point of view, but in Star Wars, those physics were never allowed, and so the question never came up. Now that's allowed, it's broken the whole universe, because they did not abide by the logical constraints of the world. The consistency of the premise, iterated throughout the world, is one of the great secrets to making a believable story world. And one of the great secrets to making a towering pile of crap that people can't even stick with, or if they do, they make fun of it a lot, is to only pay attention to your whiz-bang ideas and your premise when it's convenient for the story or the plot, and not paying attention to it when it's inconvenient. J.K. Rowling almost broke Harry Potter several times by ignoring the fact that the entire story was utterly unnecessary because she'd introduced so many devices and spells over the course of it that completely broke the plot, like the Time Turner in Prisoner of Azkaban. However, she did such a good job of wrangling her mythic archetypes and creating sympathetic characters and giving you just sort of this shadowy idea that some magic doesn't work if it's used in the wrong ways, that she managed to keep your attention off the fact that her plot was entirely broken. And she told a good enough story that you can still reread it even knowing that the plot is entirely broken, and it's okay. That is the work of a masterful storyteller. But it is also lazy work, at least in terms of the Prisoner of Azkaban. If she had left the Time Turner out and a couple other things, she wouldn't have had any plot problems in the whole series. But she couldn't resist the cool factor. So, being sure that you iterate your baseline premise out through the world, very, very important. This goes back to, the Singularities episode. A couple of years ago, I was talking about the different kinds of technological singularities that transform the world. We'll have a link in the show notes. There are things that happen in real life that change everything. And I really mean everything. Nuclear arms, the birth control pill, the Bretton Woods Agreement in World War II, industrialization, the invention of the assembly line. All of these things, every single one of them, changed the world so that it would have been utterly unrecognizable to the people who came before it, and the people who lived through the transition found the new world utterly unrecognizable. Little things like that have massive, massive effects, and if you've got things going on that could work like that, you have to ask the question, well, what else would this affect? So if you've got asteroid mining, because you've got off-world colonies that are building space stations and asteroids, you have to ask, well, what will that affect economically? What will that affect politically? What will that affect as far as the balance of power between Earth and its off-world colonies? How will that affect trade in the solar system? Which means, how will that affect the lives of workers? And you start adding one or two moving parts to that, like, what is the state of AI, for example? And you've suddenly got a world that spins out of control and becomes unrecognizable. So another way to think of stress testing a premise is working out the iterative effects of your MacGuffins and your premise. What other things, other than the story you want to tell, what other things does this premise imply? And if it has effects that make your story unworkable, how will you mitigate those? You don't have to make a big deal of it in the text, but you do have to convey the sense that there are mitigating factors that have prevented this world or this story from going the direction that might seem obvious to the intelligent reader.
Those are things that the longer your story goes, the more they show up. So as a serial series, you're going to start to see more cracks. So the longer your story is, the more you have to pay attention to those things. If you're writing a short story, who cares?
Short stories are all about effect.
Yeah, and if you're writing a 10-volume fantasy novel, you absolutely have to pay attention to those stupid niggling details. And sometimes anything works if you take an absurdist or a comedic bent to it. Something works in a fantasy setting, but not in a real-world setting. You can't look at a premise and say, this will never work. You can't decide something's going to work before you even write it.
Right.
You can only iterate the ideas and keep asking yourself questions about what does this mean as you go through. And
like with Hadrian's Flight, the thing I had to keep doing that with, oddly, was this is a normal teenager who's also a small business person, runs a family business. So how is that going to affect how he's experiencing everything? That was the thing I had to keep iterating throughout Hadrian's Flight, because that was the unusual thing I hadn't seen a lot of. So that was the thing I had to keep iterating throughout. And that's why the plot took the shape it did. There'll be some part of your premise that's that thing for you. That's the thing that has all the knock-on effects, and you want to keep that thing in the forefront of your mind as you're working through the story. You know, it's like a filter layer. Everything that goes out onto the page is passed through this filter. Well, hopefully we get a usable episode out of that. Just so you guys know, this was half an hour of wandering around trying to figure out how to answer this one, but hopefully it wound up being usable, however long the final product is. Thanks very much for the question, Robert, and I'll see you tomorrow. The Everyday Novelist is written and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and is produced by Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. The text is copyright 2018 by J. Daniel Sawyer, and the production is copyright 2018 Artistic Whispers Productions. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License, and all other rights are reserved to their respective owners.